It's just their fault. I'm not convinced they're assholes.
Mm-hmm. No. Well, they're also. It's their fault. Also, they're assholes. This is my fault and also my asshole.
Yeah, what?
This is my wife and also my sister. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for episode number 96 of Video Games Hot Dog, a podcast about video games.
We're in the same room, guys.
I know.
Yeah, what?
I know.
You know who's weird. Not in this room, though, is Chris Hull.
That's
Kickstarter
true.
Backer Chris Hull.
Neither is Kickstarter backer William Dryhead Grieve.
Ooh.
Yeah.
William Dryhead Grieve. That sounds like a guy that might assassinate someone.
That's true.
Or perhaps was the child of some sort of forest nymph.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Guys, I got some really good news.
Yeah?
I thought there was only one can of beer left in the refrigerator, but there are actually three.
Oh, wow. Is one of them for
like
Kickstarter backer
more
Jizmac?
On the counter, too.
No.
Oh. Well, then Jizmac's going to be sad.
See, normally you would think that I was excited to tell you that because we could all share a beer, but in this
case, I'm
just excited because I get to drink three beers.
Not even a little bit.
You know what the last thing I need is, guys?
More beer.
Three beers.
Yeah, if there were, I mean, if there's three, why would we have to share one? We could each have our own.
That was what I meant, Riff.
Oh.
How you guys been?
Okay.
Been all right.
We're back from San Francisco. We're all in the same room.
Yeah.
We finished out all of our GDC fancy parties.
Mm-hmm.
We left some beer behind. You know, we left the apartment that we were subletting, and I forgot to tell the guy that we left. And I think it's just going to fester for a couple days.
Oh, I'm sure they'll poke their heads in anyway.
Because that's the kind of neighbors they are.
Nosy homeowners this time around. They were nice enough, but boy, did they show up a lot.
Yeah, they
hey,
really
we brought you guys some extra coasters so you don't keep ruining our furniture, you fucking slob assholes.
Yeah, the extra coasters was
Wait,
weird.
Did I say that second part out loud? Here's a step stool in case...
You're short.
What? Yeah, like... So Emily is short. Not Emily Short, who we had drinks with.
Right.
That was great, actually. We went and had drinks with Emily Short, who made the game Counterfeit Monkey.
Mm-hmm. Among other things.
That we talked about. Oh, sure. She did all sorts of things. It's just that's the thing that she made that I liked.
Have you played with her, the new thing she did with Linden Labs,
Versus
or something?
I have not.
I've downloaded it, but I haven't checked it out yet.
What is it?
It is...
She told us, but I was drunk.
Yeah, it's a kind of interactive fiction thing where the NPCs all have sort of AI, and they keep track of how they feel about all the different characters and will react and change their opinions of things as time goes on.
Hmm.
Yeah, she was talking about reactive AI stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't know what specifically she was working on. Yeah. I think we talked about meeting her on
No, we haven't done a podcast since GDC started.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
So we met her and we hung out with her at a bar, but she had dinner plans. But then it turns out that she apparently a week ago got married to Graham Nelson, who is the guy who wrote Inform. So he showed up.
Yeah.
And she was like, this is my husband, Graham. And I said, a Graham who married somebody in the IF community. Are you a Graham that I might have heard of? Well, Graham Nelson. Oh, my God. And then I freaked out.
Yep.
I was like, hold on, guys. I got to go poop. I poop when I freak out.
Did you threaten to beat him up unless he told you how to finally finish Curses?
No, I never even bothered. I think when I played Curses... I managed to like get the projector turned on and make it into the first space that you got into, but nothing beyond
that. Yeah, that was about as far as I got, I think.
Yeah.
Curses.
Exactly. That was great, though. She's really cool. And then she gave a talk, and she seemed nervous. And I told her, hey, you seemed nervous when you gave that talk. And she was like, the lights were really bright. So I think she might be part Mogwai. And bright lights make her nervous. Yeah.
We went to GDC.
We did. We went to a bunch of panels
the Indie Games Summit,
and some of them made me depressed, and some of them made Kevin depressed, and some of them made me happy, and some of them made Kevin happy.
Was it Cross? Was the ones
nothing in common. We did not have a single one of those things in common. We saw a guy, Zach Gage?
I don't know if it's Zach Gage.
Zach Gage is somebody.
Yeah,
that's a name.
The guy who is in charge of Zachtronics.
Yeah,
Studios.
The guy that made Space Chem.
Oh,
yeah. It was
okay.
Great. He seemed like a cool dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was like, "If you're a school, Space Chem is free." So you can, your kids can learn about fake ass chemistry. Yeah.
Did he say fake ass?
Not Zach Gage. It's Zach Galifianakis.
Yes.
And Zach Braff. He did say fake. I don't know if he said that or not. And then there was a sad talk by
The Chip Ching guy.
Well, I was going to say the guy that made Retrograde, which was like, hey, here's how I fucked up the last 5 years of my life.
Jeez, yeah.
And then didn't make any
Zachary
money.
Zach Barth? Yeah.
Braff. Gage. Who's Zach Gage?
That is a different guy. That is he the...
he's that guy in Mortal Kombat,
Incredible
right?
Fishing, or what, yeah.
Ridiculous Fishing?
Ridiculous Fishing, yes.
That was a good
The
game.
Incredible Machine. Chip's Challenge. Chip Chain? The Chip Chain guy was also like, yeah, so I made Chip Chain.
Spell Tower. And,
yeah. Okay, Zach. So Zach Gage is a person who would have spoken at
sure.
this.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, the guy who made Chip Chain was like, yeah, I made Chip Chain. And I was like, woo, Chip Chain, that rules. He was like, I spent like 4 months on it, and then it has made $15,000 total. So now I'm going to go hang myself. He didn't really say that.
He was not downcast about it per se. He was just very realistic.
Yeah. Hmm. So he was like, "This is what happens when you release a free to play game. Everyone in China steals it.
Yeah.
almost nobody uses Android, and yeah, all Chinese are thieves. That was basically the takeaway." I think he might have been playing too much Bioshock Infinite, and it made him racist.
It's possible.
GDC, man.
We met a bunch of people. We went to a party at Derek Yu's.
Yeah, Emily. Place. Emily, who you might know from Video Games Taco, is just full on the best. When Kevin and I would come home from our talks on Monday and Tuesday, and be like, we're tired as fuck and depressed, and we've been arguing all day about whether we should just give up and jump off a bridge instead of ever making another video
or
game.
Or make a video game about jumping off a bridge.
Yeah, make a video game about jumping off a bridge.
Oh, hey,
it's called All Your Friends.
You could have points for...
doing flips?
Yeah, doing flips, style, avoiding the nets that they put to keep people from doing that.
This is assuming it's a bridge in a city where people care about you.
Ooh, which, okay.
Yeah. Maybe there'd be different cities. Those would be the as you'd move forward in levels, you'd move towards more and more progressive cities where they're trying to stop you from. And I guess you couldn't really be. You could just be like a series of, you know, like generations.
You could start on like a railroad trestle off in the woods.
I was going to say you start on like a natural bridge from.
Oh, like Arches National Park.
Oh, sure. Or just like, you know, like a land bridge from
Asia. Or just like the curb.
Well, no, I'm saying if we're tracing generations, that we need something that's not man-made for the first level. The first level needs to be like jump off a real tall cave. Or
I figured the other way. I was assuming you would start modern day and then you would continue into the future and be jumping off
back
future
in
bridges.
Oh, well, see, I think it'd be more interesting if you started if it went backwards. So that would be cool. It's like you are a guy who kills yourself by jumping off a bridge, and then it's like you see your grieving mother.
Oh, it's like the incident.
Who's in
at
like,
Owl Creek
what did
bridge.
I do wrong? Oh, I didn't jump off the bridge correctly. Let me try it again. And then she jumps off a bridge, and then her mother, and then her father.
So it's
and
like
her father.
And eventually, you get so far back that they're like sacrificing themselves into volcanoes and.
Sure. Yeah. What are natural things that you can jump off of that are tall that are like bridges?
Yeah. Trees, tall trees. Yeah.
How is that like a bridge? It's made of wood.
Yeah, and it's tall.
Okay.
And it's a thing that you can jump off of.
They're always painting it. They're never done painting a tree.
Okay.
Because by the time the paint on the top dries,
the bottom
paint on
grown.
The bottom is all like, oh. Yeah. Yeah, that's when you know it's time to repaint your house, is when the paint on your house is like, oh. All right. What? Bridge?
GDC. So Emily went and socialized and
when we would come home and just go to sleep at 10 o'clock, Emily would go out to fancy parties and made friends with Emily. So Emily was friends with Phil Fish's girlfriend before she started dating Phil Fish, which is why it was super weird that her handle was Phil Fish's girlfriend. It was like, I mean, I guess you pick the screen name you want, not the screen name that you have.
What does that say about Dick?
Emily, I don't know. Emily hung out with Phil Fish and his girlfriend a lot, and then finally we finally like just stop doing anything for like 2 days, let all of our old man juices replenish. And then Saturday and Sunday, what?
You should have just brought like a spare can of it.
Okay, like, yeah.
Top yourself off.
Let's all right, we should make some labels that just say old man juice and go down to Walgreens and put those labels on all the cans of Ensure.
Can't old ladies use it?
They could.
Okay.
But old ladies
is
also
it pH
like
balanced for
juice.
A man?
Yeah. Old ladies hit their sexual peak at age 70. This is what I've heard.
Huh.
They crave it. It's what old man juice. It's what old women crave. So we went out on Saturday to a party with all the indie devs, and we met a bunch of really nice people, and it was great.
Yeah.
And we stood around in the rain, and everybody was – you know what was weird about that indie dev party?
What was weird about the indie dev party?
That is the first time since 10 years ago that I have been at a party where like two-thirds of the people were smoking cigarettes.
I was really surprised.
Well, I might be exaggerating. There was more than one person smoking cigarettes at this party.
Yeah, but most of them were marijuana cigarettes.
There were a lot of just cigarettes.
Okay.
There was an amount of marijuana in the air and everywhere else.
Yep.
San Francisco, man, they don't give a fuck.
Yeah, everyone in San Francisco is just high all the time.
They get really mad at you if you, like, smoke a cigar in front of a baby. But if you, like, literally inflate a baby with marijuana smoke, they're like, yeah, whatever.
To be fair, you were using that baby as an ashtray.
It wanted it. It's like, my.
Yeah, did you see how it was dressed? In a onesie that said ashtray.
Ashtray.
Ah, that's great. Let's start a line of baby clothing that just says, like, toilet. It's just a onesie that says toilet.
There's a band that I like called Ashtray Babyhead.
Oh,
so.
Okay. Somebody beat us to it.
Yep.
What's your takeaway from GDC, Kevin?
Go make games. Also, everybody hates women, apparently. Or something.
A lot of gender politics at the forefront of GDC, which is great, you know? So we were at the Yeti Zen party.
That caused all the kerfuffle.
Well, it caused him, maybe not all of the kerfuffle. See, I would argue that the kerfuffle was a thing, and the Yeti Zen party merely crystallized the kerfuffle.
I see.
It led to Brenda Braithwaite, Brenda Romero?
Yeah, same woman.
I forget whether, so Anna Anthropy, there was a poem that Anna Anthropy recited that was written by somebody whose name that I didn't recognize. Probably remember if it was a man, but it was a good poem. There were parts of it.
It's called John Romero's Wives.
Yeah, it was called
Wives.
John Romero's Wives. So Brenda Braithwaite, well, Brenda Knee Braithwaite.
She was Braithwaite. I think she is now Brenda Romero.
Wounded Knee Braithwaite.
Yeah.
Resigned from her chair as head of chair.
Her position at IGDA.
Her head chair. She moved her IKEA chair away from the IGDA Women in Games table forum.
IGDA being the Independent Game Developers Association.
Who put on this party.
They were one of many people
who put on the party. I'm going to stop making noise with this thing in my hands. And there were some girls. The club or the promoters, the Yeti Zen people, had hired some girls to dance in Yeti costumes. While we were at the party, we all sort of observed, like, huh, that's kind of tacky.
Yep.
And it did seem tacky. And I guess in light of the environment of...
Especially in light of it was poor taste. There was no reason for it to begin with, and then especially in light of the sort of prevailing sentiment.
I do wonder if the decision to hire those girls to dance at this thing was made months before.
Possibly.
At least one of the articles that I had been reading about it indicated that Yeti Zen or whatever that was in charge of this has been called out for this sort of thing previously. And that therefore the author said they should have known better than to do it again.
Right.
But I don't really know how to feel about the whole thing. I mean, so saying, well, I don't see what the problem is, means that you're speaking from a position of privilege. And so the fact that you don't see what the problem is means that you're part of the problem rather than part of the solution. I wonder if there is a part of me that wonders if focusing on stuff like this is, it's not that it's okay for them to have hired dancing girls. It is that I wonder if criticizing something that is pretty innocuous, right? Like it, although, and then there's the argument that it's not actually innocuous, but I would say that most of the people that I talked to at the party, men and women alike, were like, huh, that's kind of tacky. I wouldn't have expected them to do something like that at like a nerd party, right? Like this seems like if this was a banking convention, this is the kind of thing that you would expect, but like it's just sort of crass. But like, crass is not an unforgivable crime, right? I mean, crass is just crass. Tacky is tacky.
Like hiring girls to do this just to have some girls there, I think is indicative of there being a problem, right? Like,
well, here, what if as a club owner you discovered that if you paid some attractive girls to hang out at your club and just be friendly and talk to people, that you sold twice as many drinks.
Sure.
Right? I mean, that's gross in a couple of ways.
Right.
But it's the kind of thing that would lead to a situation where it's like, oh, there are going to be people here, huh? We should probably hire some girls. You know? Yeah. I really don't know how to feel about it.
I feel like it's to focus too much on this particular situation is like to spend all your energy attacking like this minor symptom of a much larger problem when you could be focusing more on the problem as a whole, maybe.
And I wonder if focusing on the minor thing doesn't give your asshole Reddit men's rights activist opponents a more silly seeming thing to focus their counterattack on.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It was weird. It was nice to see that sort of thoughtfulness in the air at GDC. Sure. And I mean, it might have just been like, the indie space has decided to like, you know, to rally behind this thing. I don't know.
I don't know how many people in the AAA sector thought about it at all. Right? Like it was almost all indie game devs that I heard anything about talking about it.
We saw a panel that was Terry Kavanaugh and the Porpentine.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
They run a site called freeindiegames.es.
Well, it's
freeindiegame.es. Yes. Yeah.
There's like five people that contribute to that site.
And so they gave a talk where the thesis was basically like traditional mainstream games journalism does a disservice to the world by not focusing on or by not giving enough attention to these out of the way niche games. And this talk like specifically focused on like games centered around trans issues, games by women, games by LGBT folks. And it was a weird thing to watch because most of the games that were pictured seemed interesting, but not necessarily good.
Right.
Fun. Yeah. So there was a game that I wish I could remember the name of. I made Kevin play Dysphoria at the IGF booth. And so now we could talk about that.
Yeah.
Once we get to the point in this show where we'd start talking about video games, which is not now. There were some neat things. There was like 10 or 12 games that they went through. And I would say that 90% of them were things that I was like, okay, it does not look like a thing that I want to play at all. Like, I guess I'm glad that that exists. I'm glad that somebody made that, and if somebody is able to play it and enjoy it, then I'm glad.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this with some of the other people at GDC, that the notion of, like, how important is it that something that you make be sort of accessible and something that somebody would want to play in addition to whatever kind of statement or feeling or whatever that you're trying to convey, right? And I think that there's, I think that there is an important responsibility almost on the part of the developer to make something, especially if it's a video game that's supposed to be interactive, unless your entire point is to not have it be accessible, that you're doing a disservice to your own project by having it be inscrutable or like an unpleasant experience. Like, you know, some of these games are meant to elicit feelings of alienation or whatever. So, like, that's going to be part of the experience, but...
I mean, I think that you can make a sad movie, right? Like, you can make a movie that doesn't have a happy ending if that's the movie that you want
to
make.
But you almost always need to have somebody that's relatable in the movie.
There are people
right?
that appreciate it, yeah. But, I mean, it needs to not be a movie that is just, like, a bunch of saw blades cutting other saw blades in half, and then at the end... a little kid dies.
Right.
Right. Like,
I'd watch that.
You would not.
You would, but you... Yeah.
Not if it was 2 hours long.
I'd watch it on the other monitor while playing Minecraft.
Watch it at 4x speed.
Yeah.
I mean,
even in, like, nature documentaries, there's some sort of narrator making the animals... not necessarily personifying them, but like,
but
explicating a narrative about what's going on, right?
I don't know that I agree with you that people making weird ass games have a responsibility to make their games less weird.
No,
but if they want a lot of people to play them.
That's what I was saying. Like in the context of journalists, like if you know, the irony being that it wasn't the game creators themselves that were arguing that these things should, that their games should be, get wider recognition. It was, you know, these sort of curators of indie game content saying, why aren't the mainstream media doing this? And, you know, you and I were kind of like, well, you're doing it. You've made this website where you show these games off. You don't really talk about them. Like, there's no editorial content, but you're collating them. So anybody who cares can go and see them. So where's the problem? Right, like the fact that they're not the first on the front page of, you know, Polygon or Reddit or whatever is like
you don't expect to read about some really opaque black and white artsy French film in the pages of Entertainment Weekly.
Right. Exactly. And you're not pissed at Entertainment Weekly. I mean, maybe you are. Maybe you know, why is my YouTube video not being featured on, you know,
it's weird.
E-Hollywood stories.
I wouldn't have thought that anybody in the Indie Games Summit would care about mainstream games journalism. Right? Like, there are some, except, like, Polygon, I'll read Polygon, but I'm not going to read a Polygon, like, just review of a game.
Really?
Right? Yeah, because I don't have, there is nothing... I have no reason to read a review of a game ever. Like, I'm just not interested in reading a game review.
Huh.
Right? I will listen to podcasts where people with no agenda and no filter talk about a game. And, like, if I'm trying to decide whether I want to buy a game or not, right? I mean, I will.
I think you are very rare in that. That you won't read a game review if you're just trying to decide whether you want a game.
I mean, do you read a lot of game reviews?
No, but I also don't buy a lot of games.
Do you read a lot of game reviews?
Just by nature of having, like, Destructoid in my RSS feed, I see a bunch of them. Mm.
I feel like a lot of people probably would, you know, if they were on the fence about buying something, they'd say, well, what do other people think? And they would go and look at some reviews. You know, if you're crazy gung, if you're already a fan, then you're not going to be swayed probably. You know, I read the SimCity review, which I thought was interesting.
I've started trying to read more reviews before I automatically go ahead and buy something, just because I've been burned.
Yeah, I've read, like, there's some iOS games that I was like, huh, this looks sort of interesting. What do other people think? And I've read a review and then been dissuaded.
Well, user reviews. I mean,
no, but like actual printed reviews.
I mean, I guess I read Touch Arcade, right? And sometimes they will, like, just in hearing them describe a game, I will decide whether it's a game that I want to buy or not. And I guess that's me reading traditional games journalism. But that's in the iOS space. I mean, I feel like there's not really any difference between big titles and small titles in the iOS space. It's not... Maybe I'm wrong about that. You know,
a big
maybe.
Title wouldn't fit underneath the icon.
Oh.
Sure. What does the icon for ridiculous fishing say?
Ridiculous.
Just ridiculous. Okay. Yeah. And that, as one word, will fit under the icon?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good. Have you guys been playing any video games?
I played... I've been playing a lot of the new... Luigi's Mansion.
Okay.
Dark Moon is the subtitle.
On the 3DS?
That's right. It's pretty good.
What do? You vacuum up ghosts?
You vacuum up ghosts. It's sort of a...
You're just like a janitor in your own mansion?
No. The plot is that Professor Egad, the mad scientist from the Mario and Luigi games, has been doing ghost research in this valley where there's a lot of ghosts, and they're all friendly because of the influence of the Dark Moon, which is this sort of giant moon-shaped Jolly Rancher, grape Jolly Rancher hanging in the sky.
Uh-huh.
And some unknown evil miscreant destroys it or shatters it into the six requisite parts.
Right.
And that causes all the ghosts to flip their shit and become menacing.
How do the goat men feel about this situation?
They're upset.
Goat men are pretty much upset all the time about everything.
Well, their lands are constantly being littered with shards of, you know, important video game relics. It's kind of ridiculous.
So he sends you into this succession of five different mansions to clean them out.
It's not even a single mansion?
No, it's
Luigi's mansions.
Yeah, Luigi's mansions, basically.
How do six fragments fit into five mansions?
The professor has got one already at the start of the game.
What?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Is there any bean digging in this game?
No. There is.
I don't even know who you are.
There
anymore,
is
Professor
dirt
Egad.
Vacuuming.
Okay.
I was starting to get convinced. There's a mission in the near the end of the first mansion where you just have to go in and vacuum up every cobweb in the mansion.
Oh my God.
At that point, I was starting to wonder if maybe the professor had slipped some funny mushrooms into Luigi's coffee and was just tricking him into cleaning his house for him.
Right.
But
were there also like sort of baggage that you could unlock with a baggage tag and then some figments?
There are some. There's a... Each mansion has a set of 13 gems that you can find that are hidden in various ways.
But the professor already has one of them.
Well, no, that's this is a different thing.
I know. I was kidding.
And there's Booze, the classic Mario ghost, the round boo.
Oh,
guy.
Booze.
Yeah.
Not Booze.
Right.
Okay.
That there's one of those hidden in every...
Are the ghosts
every
different
mission.
Than Booze?
Yeah, they're more transparent guys. They're more Pac-Man ghosty, you know.
Okay. Sheet draped
yeah,
over.
Yeah, sheet ghosts. Yeah,
objects.
Yeah, and
The boos are sort of sheet ghosts too, but you just don't see the like frilly bottoms.
Yeah,
they're more like thought bubble ghosts.
But if you find all of those in the mansion, then you get an extra mission at the end when you've finished it. And
I always assumed that boos were the ghosts of fish because they look like fish.
Hmm.
Huh. I think of them as more bulbous than fish.
Well, but not a Super Mario fish. Super Mario fish are pretty bulbous.
Oh, okay.
The cheeps.
Cheap cheeps.
Are those fish or birds?
I think they're like flying fish, right? Because they jump out of the water at you as you're going across that bridge.
I mean, all birds are actually fish. This is what we've learned from Jurassic Park.
That's true. That's evolution.
So what do you think, Riff?
It's cool. It's pretty compelling. It looks really nice. It's really well animated. The 3D effect is used well. The mirrors look fantastic. The mirrors are cooler in it than in any other video game I've seen.
Huh.
It seems like a sort of a
Do they just show
all or nothing?
Show you a picture of you?
Yeah, it's but actually it's just Duke Nukem. It's dimensional and properly with the 3D effect.
Oh, okay.
And they use it in some puzzles. There are some things that like ghosts show up in mirrors where you can't otherwise see them, or there'll be an object that you can't see because it's too near the fourth wall, but you can see it in a mirror across the room.
Oh, that's kind of annoying, but okay.
Yeah. But the animations are all really nice, and it's pretty fun. It's got some of that good classic adventure gamey kind of stuff. You know, you notice that the wallpaper is peeling on the wall, so you vacuum it off a thing and you find a key, or you vacuum a carpet to make it roll up so that you can stand on a pressure plate underneath it and stuff like that.
You know, I think I played a demo of this at Dragon Con.
Possible.
Did they have this? Were you with us at the Nintendo room at Dragon Con where they had the booth babes for some reason?
They also had booth babes at the Nintendo room?
They did.
I was certainly at Dragon Con.
There were all these girls in tight shirts trying to get you to play 900 golden coins or whatever.
Weird.
Yeah, it was weird. I didn't feel safe.
Yeah.
What else?
That's pretty much it. As far as straight up video games, I've been saving BioShock Infinite until I've got a distraction-free day, like a Saturday, where I don't have to be anywhere or talk to anybody. So
would you characterize your life as one filled with distractions and social obligations on weekdays?
Well, it's also that, like, it's that plus just being in the perfect mood to play a shooter type game of that nature. Because it's a game that I've been anticipating long enough, and everyone seems to like well enough that I don't want to go into it going, yeah, I guess I can play some BioShock. You know, I want to be pumped for it because it seems like
what do you think?
It seems like it won't bear out that. Just be in the mood, I guess.
Just being mad at dudes and want to explode. Yeah,
when it explodes in dudes.
You just want to splatter dudes' brains all over.
Put a chainsaw in someone's face.
All over.
Summon some bees.
There's no bees.
Birds.
Can you birds. Play through it without killing anybody?
No. It's you start playing BioShock Infinite and you're like, oh, this is really cool. I'm moving around. These environments are really neat. And, you know, you go and there's some dudes there and there's like, wow, these dudes aren't trying to kill me. This is like, I'm walking around in a world. Yeah. And then it's like, klaxons go off and they put a gun in your hand. It's like, here, shoot 50 dudes in the face. I'm like, oh, okay, right.
Oh, right. It's a video game.
Yeah. It was, I think that the fact that was so disappointing is a real testament to how compelling the experience prior to that was. And I don't know I don't know what that means, right? Like, BioShock, let's just say original BioShock. It would have been fun to just wander around in that world and see stuff, but every actual game system was in support of the combat, right? Like all of the vending machines, everything that you ever picked up, you know, like a bag of potato chips. Oh, what does that do? It increases my health. Oh, why would my health go down? All right, because dudes are shooting me, right? And so there's no reason for anything.
It would be really cool
other than the scenery to exist outside
of
combat.
If games of that type started just having a mode that, you know, no story or anything, but just let you walk around and tour the environments.
And just read the audio diaries.
Yeah, read the audio diaries. Look at the graffiti and the billboards. And I mean, if they're going to put that much work into making the environment so lavish and detailed, then they should make sure you've got some time to stop and gawk at everything.
Well, they do. They do. I mean, there is a lot of downtime. There is basically as much downtime as you want.
Okay.
BioShock Infinite, more than any other like modern first-person shooter I've played, it is very clear the delineation between when you're in combat and when you're not in combat. Like, and a lot of it is because like there are a lot of like locks in the environment that you can have Elizabeth unlock for you. And when you mouse over a lock, that's how you can tell whether you're in combat or not. Because if it says Elizabeth is busy, then that means you're in combat and she can't open it for you. And if it says this will cost 4 lock picks, then that means that you're not in combat. Hmm. Also, the audio, there's a lot of dynamic audio stuff that's pretty cool. Like you get a sense of when you kill the next to last dude, and then a definite sense of when you've killed the last dude in a sequence.
So just like in real life.
Yeah. I mean, the super crisp delineation between combat and not being in combat is fine. I mean, like, you know, used to playing MMOs, right? And so those are just two very distinct game states in like, wow, you're either in combat or not. And there are certain things that you just can't do if you're in combat. You know, Dear Esther is a game about moving around and exploring stuff, and you never kill anybody. Nobody ever shoots at you. You don't have any health or any interactions with the world at all, really, apart from just moving around and looking at things.
I would not have minded so much there not being any action if there had been some non-combat interaction.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks that combat, like, shooting dudes is a way in which you can be an active agent in an environment, right? And it's one that doesn't require there to be a lot of nuance to dudes, right? All you need in order to get shot is to be moving around and then have it be real obvious if your head gets blown off and you stop moving, right? If it was like, oh, let's, you know, like, this is a game about moving around this amazing floating city, giving a bunch of dudes hand jobs. Like, then you suddenly have to model a bunch of other behaviors other than just, like, run around yelling at you and die. Right?
I mean, what did you feel about Miyaz Mata? Because that's...
I was going to mention Miyaz Mata. I liked Miyaz Mata. I still haven't finished it. It's not a perfect game by any means, but it had this sort of thing that I like, that just that idea of being able to explore and interact with things without having to worry about challenges, you know?
I mean, Miyaz Mata seemed like tremendously challenging to me. Like, it felt like every system was trying to stop you from playing the game. And the challenge was in just like fucking getting anywhere and accomplishing anything. Although, largely because I was so much worse at it than you guys were. I played the IGF build of Gone Home, Steve Gaynor and the Fulbright Company's new game, and it is cool. It's, you know, you're basically like moving around this house, learning about the people that live in the house, and the fact that there is no there are sort of like marginal video gamey interactions. You have an inventory, so like you can find a key, and then that lets you into a lock. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and there is a thing where it's like there's a locker and you find two pieces of paper that are like the halves of the combination or whatever. And you don't actually have to do anything. Like, it's just once you have those two things in your inventory, you could just open the locker. Like, it's basically just another key. But it isn't hard. You just have to be thorough about looking around. But that's what the game is looking in every drawer to see if there is a letter for you to read. And certain like sort of pivotal things that you find cause these audio diaries to play, which are kind of out of context. I don't know if there eventually gets to be a context for them, but like you don't find like a record player that this girl was speaking into or whatever. Also, I'm pretty sure that speaking into a record player has not ever been the way that anyone creates audio.
You can make a record by scratching it while you play it, while you
like a wax cylinder,
a regular record. You can just plastic, you can scratch in your own audio track if you do it. I mean, it's the same,
but you don't.
Sure.
This game does not take place in some MIT frat house.
Okay,
Kevin. But it's the density of the sort of flavor stuff is dramatically increased in this game, right?
Yeah, like that's exciting to me. Just the, I don't know, the notion of going in someone's house and poking around and looking in all the closets, and
it's cool. It's good. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to when it comes out and everyone can buy it and it can win every award. What about you, Kevin?
So I've been playing a bunch of 8685-6527.
Yeah. What's the significance of that number?
8685-2527.
8685-6527.
See, I just go to the games directory on my hard drive.
No, it might not have any meaning. It's possible.
Indie devs like awkward names.
Well, sure.
There's that other game, Bump.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not awkward.
So this is a 7-day roguelike game, and it's just a ton of fun. It's very challenging.
It's a very abstract hacking game.
Yeah, you start off as one of, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 random character classes, which have slightly different.
Three?
There's at least 4.
Okay.
There's the wizard, there's the AI, there's the agent, and there's the hacker. Okay. There might be another one or two that I'm 4. Forgetting about.
Because you either start with some dollars or some energy or an extra siphon or a skill.
Right.
Yeah. Describe this game to the people. So it's found myself at these parties like trying to
describe it. It's a 6x7 grid.
Terrible.
Each grid space either has a skill in it, which is also a wall, or some money or energy, or sometimes a little bit of both. On each level, there are 2 siphons that you can pick up. And if you use those, you will collect what's in the square you're standing in, plus each of the 4 cardinal directions away from you, so that you can, you know, potentially pick up to 3 skills if you were doing that or whatever, or just a bunch of resources or a combination of the both. The tricky bit is that enemies will spawn. On the first floor, there's 1 right away. On the second floor, there's 2. When you enter the level, then there's 3 and so on. And they also spawn periodically, individually over time. And then also, anytime you pick up a skill, it'll spawn some number of enemies. And the more powerful the skill, the more enemies it will spawn.
There are also some blocks that are just worth points.
Yeah, and so then the other thing is that none of that gives you any points. The only way to get points is there's a skill called score, which gives you points based on how much more of the game there is. So like if you use it on level 1, you get 8 points every time you cast it. Whereas if you use it on the last level, when you have a bunch of resources, it's only worth 1 point.
There was a game I saw an article about today. I wish I could think of the name of it. But it was it had a similar thing like that, except it was a first-person shooter.
Okay.
And so you, by killing enemies, you got like health and ammo and stuff. But you only got score by firing this other gun that all it did was shoot points out. And so,
okay.
So you had to balance between using real weapons to kill enemies to get resources. How many of these resources are you going to spend on your points gun just making points? And while you're firing the points gun, you're not firing a real gun, so the enemies are still coming after you.
I see. Yeah, and so then the other way to get points that's probably the most straightforward way is instead of a skill, sometimes there are just points in the walls. And then the skills are pretty interesting. They are, you know, the very low end, there's like the weight skill, because like each time you move, the enemies move.
Yeah, and you do not have
it's a roguelike.
Okay. You do not have as a principal verb stand still.
Yeah.
And you're often screwed because of that, because the enemies move very predictably. And if you
move
adjacent
to
an enemy, you only have 3 hit points.
Yeah.
And if you move adjacent to an enemy, they will attack you. If you move adjacent to 3 enemies, you're just dead.
Yeah.
So yeah, you wait.
So wait can be a pretty powerful verb. And then another one is like warp, which is like a low-level skill, which just randomly teleports you to somebody else in that same level. And then there's sort of, you get to some like attack skills. So there's like bomb, which does 1 point of damage everywhere, like in every square around you. Attack increases the amount of damage that you do by 1. So that will let you kill almost any enemy in 1 shot, except for like the heavy hit point ones. There's only like 4 different kinds of enemies as well, and they're all very different, and they are very frustrating in their own ways. So there's like the virus, which moves 2 spaces instead of 1.
So if it's 1 space away from you and you stand still, it'll can move you. And attack you.
Yeah, it's rough. And then there's the Cryptog, which you can only see if you're in the same column or row as it, otherwise it's invisible.
Huh.
And it will flank you, so you'll come out of a space and it will be diagonal to you, and so it will attack you after you move.
And you won't have seen it, so it's that's really mean. And then there's one that can pass the debug. No, there's is it
I forget what it's a glitch.
Glitch that can pass through walls. And then there is the
demon.
Demon, which
has one more hit point than all the other.
So you can't just kill it with one attack. So it's, and it's just super well balanced and fun. I think he's going to release it on iOS. That was what we said. And it just seems like super great.
Cool.
And so we've been in the Video Games Hot Talk forums, we've been posting our high score lists.
You're trying to win. Like, there's only 8 screens, and you exiting the 8th screen means you get out alive, but you're also trying to do that with the most points.
Yeah.
So it's easy to get a whole bunch of points, which then spawns a bunch of enemies that kill you.
Okay.
But, like, striking the balance, but, like, figuring out what your build is going to be to get through the game and score enough points is...
And each level is also completely randomly generated, so sometimes there are almost no skills or zero skills, and there's just a couple of point squares, or like the board is very sparse, and sometimes it's really crowded, and a bunch of skills are potentially available. Only having 2 siphons gets to be tricky, right? Because like per level, there's only twice that you can gather resources.
Can you not save them for a later level?
You can.
Okay.
If you want, but you want to get as much as you can. There is a skill called siphon, which lets you trade in 5 currency for 1 siphon, which you can often get more than 5 currency with a siphon. So it's usually, there are places on the map where that becomes a net positive to just sort of cycle through. It's just super neat. Like a bunch of relatively simple systems that in and of themselves are not that complicated, just giving rise to a really neat gameplay experience.
It's like Bump in that you're competing for score and a game takes 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Or 10 or 15, depending on how careful you're being.
Oh, well, I'm never being at all careful. So yeah. 3 minutes.
And so that's, I've been playing that. And then I played, as Zach mentioned, I played Dysphoria at the Indie Games Festival booth at GDC. And it's like about maybe 10, 15 minutes of gameplay. And it is not really very gamey.
3 minutes.
3 minutes? I think it's a little bit more than that.
Talk about this while I go get a beer.
Okay. So it's written, it was written by Anantropy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's talking about the sort of the sensation or the experience and feelings of being somebody who is transgendered, right? Like someone who wants to be identified as female but has male characteristics, right? Mm-hmm. And so like talking about how it's embarrassing to have to shave because you consider yourself a woman and you shouldn't have to shave, and it's weird going into women's bathrooms because you feel like you're a spy. And it's people always are calling you sir and you want them to call you ma'am and stuff like that. And so the sort of, it goes through a bunch of stages where you interact in a very sort of limited way with that kind of metaphor as a game object or whatever. And then you get depressed, but then you sort of decide that you're going to go ahead and try to like get, hormone treatments. And then you sort of, you sort of go through the same set of experiences, but now feel more empowered and sort of see how that changes your interactions in those ways. And, you know, it was definitely thought provoking, and it definitely gave you a sense of, you know, the kind of alienation kind of feelings that you're going to have, but it didn't really feel much like a game. There weren't many things that you would really consider like game systems.
The individual gameplay elements are sort of like WarioWare style.
Kind of, yeah, but you don't.
But I think they're designed.
You don't get any sense of it like it being important whether you actually do them.
No, but I think that it isn't important whether you win, right? What is important is the way in which they are frustrating, and how that expresses the way in which the source emotion is frustrating.
Yeah, potentially. It's using games as a way to try to convey, you know, emotions or mental states that would be foreign to somebody else, I think is a really interesting idea. And I don't know how much of this has been done historically, but it's really, I'm really kind of glad that we're at a point where people are starting to use that as a way to express themselves. I'm kind of curious to see what will happen 10 years from now when this has become sort of a more, you know, practiced and rich space, you know. These were just like game maker games that were sort of very, very simply constructed. And I'm wondering, like, what can be done with, like, a lot more time and skill under
like the Quake 1 engine.
Yeah, sure. Like a Blendo game.
Yeah.
And besides that, the only other thing that I spent any time playing was Beau Blythe's game, Samurai Gun, with two N's. That's it's not out yet. It was in this year's IGF competition, and he's been working on it for a while, and it's like
Is that the game they were playing at that party?
Yeah,
with the caves.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You're a samurai. You have a sword. You have a gun. Each life you only have 3 bullets, and you're just wandering around the map.
And you have to save the last one for yourself in case you dishonor the cave.
Right. and you're sort of jumping around. It feels like N plus, but instead of the environment being really brutal, it's it's 1 to 3 other players.
Oh.
It's 2 to 4 Ooh. 2 to 4 player game. And it was just fun. It was very fast paced. It was really neat. The environments, like some of the levels are really well designed. Some of them are sort of boring-ish.
By the time I saw people playing that, I was way too high to talk to him. Man, I thought I was going to have to talk to Jonathan Blow. Jonathan Blow showed up at the party and I was just like, fuck. I'm way too high to talk to Jonathan Blow. I'm just going to embarrass myself. Yeah. And maybe accidentally take Jonathan Blow's pants off.
Did he have a demo build I've forgotten the name. The Witness.
I don't think he takes it to parties with him. No, he had like a beer.
I got to see. Oh, wow. I got to see a fly through of some of the world.
Yeah. There was a video. There was a video on the expo floor of some of the Witness stuff.
Yeah, cool. It looks like it'll be really neat. Actually, yeah. I had sort of on purpose been kind of keeping myself away from it.
I've been keeping up with the developer blog for it. It looks like it's going to be pretty interesting.
It looks like it's a bunch of like line puzzles, and then the whole island is a giant line puzzle.
So. What makes you say that the whole island is a giant line puzzle? Because there are beams.
Beams and mirrors.
That's not a lines.
I mean, it looked like the same kind of mechanisms that you were learning about on the grids were then going to be done at a much grander scale, which is cool.
I didn't get that impression.
Okay.
What's that Sekhmet or something that board game with the lasers?
Oh,
that you
yeah.
have to, that you have to play.
I invented that. The bastards, somebody else invented it and put it into market before I could.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Is this like when you wrote that horror novel, The Lost Room, and someone else?
Did you actually think of The Lost Room before?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, he thought of it after it came out.
Oh.
Subtle difference in the creative process.
I thought of Sekhmet, though, when I was in, like, high school.
There was a program in a creative computing or maybe compute exclamation point magazine that was a sort of like a chess with lasers and reflective pieces called Laser Chess. Yeah. You also played a bunch of Shell Razor.
Oh, right. I had forgotten about that.
We saw a talk about it, and we're like, I'm going to buy this. And then he was like, surprise, no, you're not, because it's free during GDC. So Ooh. Take that, fuckers. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to buy this game's price in in-app purchases right away. So take that, developer.
It is a game.
I never actually spoke to this man. I was just sitting there in a closet, just twitching.
So it is a side-scrolling game. The game scrolls for you. You are a giant turtle, and you can mount different kinds of orcs who have different kinds of weapons on your back.
Okay.
Would you say that you are the turtle? I never really felt like I was anyone in that game.
I think you're the turtle.
I felt like I was a guy pointing at stuff and telling the dudes on a turtle to shoot.
Yeah, but I think you're the
is
turtle.
Is this iOS? What is it?
It is iOS. Okay. Yeah. It is a extremely multi-touch game because you are, to do well, you have at least 2 or 3 fingers doing things at all times, and it kind of gets out of control at points.
You know who has 2 or 3 fingers doing things at all times? God Emperor Jeremy Bornstein.
Oh yeah,
yeah. A lot of is that the Jeremy
that
I'm
is?
Thinking of? Yeah, he one of his fingers is making moonshine.
Yep. One is making hot sauces.
Okay.
Salads. Yeah.
One of them is doing some sous vide cooking of eggs.
Yep. One is probably doing some martial arts of some kind, perhaps involving swords. He's actually in our news segment later.
Is he?
On. Yeah, more or less. Subutai is. So.
Oh, I see.
Yes. What was I even saying now? Oh, fingers. Shellraiser. Yes. Oh shit. Who else has three fingers?
Mike Moss.
Oh, yeah. Mike Moss.
Mike Moss is a board game enthusiast.
Yep.
He was recently talking on Advice Hot Dog about a board game about art forgery.
Art forgery?
Or something, yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Well, it's either forgery or Garfunkel. I don't remember which.
Somebody made a fake Garfunkel?
Did somebody make a game where they like give you a piece of art and then you have to draw a copy of it?
Yeah, it's whoever, called Pictionary.
Whoever, oh, there. Shit. I invented that.
Whatever riff.
The game starts off really easy and the difficulty ramps up pretty hardcore by the end.
You know who else is pretty hardcore by the end? Bloodroot. Kickstarter backer Bloodroot.
That's pretty hardcore sounding.
I don't know. I think Kickstarter backer BMAC could probably take Bloodroot in a 1v1.
I've got one here called Shadman the Wicked.
Oh. Yeah, that'd be a good three-way match.
This might be a tough one.
So, yeah, that's Shellraiser. It's
Martin.
Is it Martin Van Buren?
Yeah. I'm assuming it's Martin Lawrence.
Oh.
I
guess that would have been my second
guess. Now that his comedy career is over, because somebody finally told him, dude, you're not funny. So he's like, all right, I'm going to take my money, and I'm going to go out into the woods, and I'm going to make 6-inch by 6-inch paintings and back video games Kickstarters.
Oh.
And that's all he does now. Oh, hey, speaking of which, you guys. There is a Kickstarter right now for a game whose development I've been following called Worlds of Magic, which is a spiritual successor to Master of Magic, which is something the world needs. If for no other reason than to point out to a new generation of people, you could just download and play Master of Magic, and that would be pretty fucking good.
Is it by anybody that was involved with the original Master of Magic?
No. That was the 90s. Those people are all long dead.
Drug overdoses, one and all.
Oh, sure. They finally cast the spell of mastery and opened a portal into some sort of nether realm.
Just filled with cocaine.
You think that's what wizards are after?
Yeah.
Cocaine.
Well, so they can cast more spells. Yes, they can.
Okay.
Yeah, is that all you've been playing? Is BioShock cocaine? Infinite and Shellraiser and 8685-6527?
It's been a really long time, but yes.
Okay.
Let me look at my phone.
Yeah?
You know, we played a little bit of that game Elis, E-L-I-S-S, for iOS, which is the multi-touch game by a guy that we met
one of the really early iPhone party. Games.
Yeah, won some awards. He's working on something else called Far Away, and he is a cool, cool dude.
Steph Therion.
I think it's short for Stefan.
Okay.
So he said, but he introduced himself as Steph, and he's credited Therion? On all these games and stuff.
That's
Therion. Yeah,
that's a good name.
Like
nice.
That's like the name you would game make up if you were trying to be a super badass. Yeah, Dinklage. My name is Steph Dinklage.
You know, another good name if you're going to be a badass is AJ Hunter.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Or NC Darkness. We ought to get those two guys together, man.
I'm going to hunt the darkness.
So, I mean, do you think that those two people were the inspiration for Andrew Plotkin's game Hunter in Darkness?
Oh, I think that may well be.
Cool.
AJNC, Hunter in Darkness.
Segway! Kevin, what's in the news?
Disney has killed LucasArts.
No.
You know, I loved a bunch of LucasArts games, but I have not really seen anything out of them recently that
Does this mean that we're never going to see another X-Wing versus TIE Fighter still?
Possibly.
Okay.
It sounds like they're going to keep licensing stuff, but that they are no longer developing anything themselves, which, you know, that makes some sense.
Sure.
Does Disney produce anything themselves, or do they also farm all that stuff out? Was Epic Mickey was like an outside studio, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Owl Pellets?
What about them?
They produce Disney produces owl pellets.
Is there a Disney owl character?
Sure. I just want Mickey Mouse's skeleton in an owl pellet.
That would be pretty good. It'd be like one of those things you buy at the Science Museum gift shop where you chisel the things out of a block of clay and assemble them into a pyramid or whatever.
Yes.
You know
those
things?
What the fuck are you talking about?
I have no idea.
You've never seen it? It's a common sort of museum gift shop thing where you get like a block of clay or plaster and some rudimentary plastic archaeological tools and you dig, I don't know, little brass trinkets or rough gemstones or whatever out of the plaster as though you are an archaeologist.
You're making this up.
I'm not making this
up. Okay. And then what do you do with them?
You build them into a pyramid?
Same shit you do with any little plastic trinket or brass.
Throw it away.
Widget. Yeah.
Stick in your butt.
Put it in a shelf or something. Yeah.
Huh. In a shelf.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
You make a plaster shelf with all the trinkets buried inside it so that then somebody will come along.
Right. And the cycle of life continues.
In the future. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Harmonics.
What you do is you swallow a bunch of liquid plaster of Paris and all these trinkets.
Oh.
And then jump off a bridge.
Yes.
So that someday
someone will find a perfect plaster cast of your insides.
Chisel all the gems out of it.
Yeah.
And if they get 3 red gems in a row, those gems will disappear and give them 100 points.
Harmonix has put a kibosh. This was the last week that they had DLC for Rock Band.
They just ran out of songs, right? Like every song.
Every song is now
on Rock Band. So
yeah. So they went, I think, 5.5 years. But I guess it's just over now. Nobody cares anymore. I have not seen anyone play Rock Band in years.
Yeah.
It was really huge for such a brief shining moment.
I started getting mad at people for playing Rock Band at my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, playing a board game or something, and then
a rock band
it just
party.
Became
like,
very loud.
It's like, hey, let's play Rock Band. Oh, you mean let's go down there and just be real, real, real loud while anybody else is trying to do anything else. It was fine if it was crazy party town and the only people inside were the ones playing Rock Band and everybody else was out back smoking cigarettes.
Weeds.
Nobody smokes weed.
No, weeds.
Here.
Like, they would just go out.
Clover, and like hayseed.
Yes.
Hayseed is a weed, right?
Sure.
Spamagnum.
So at GDC, there were some award ceremonies.
Bristle pine.
Journey.
Why don't I know the name of any weeds? Dandelion?
Dandelion.
Okay, dandelion.
Yeah.
Clover.
Yeah,
Lantana. So Lantana. Take that.
Journey won a bunch of awards.
Yeah, didn't they win like 6 of 11 possible awards or something?
Yes.
Yeah, they won the Lantana Lifetime Achievement Award.
They
growing real fast.
Went nuts. They got a bunch of awards. So Riff,
roses.
Do you think that they were the best game of 2012?
Journey.
Because you actually
Journey.
Yeah, you played through it.
I did play it. I have fond memories of sliding down sand dunes with my good buddy Spick Nasty MF.
Does it mean anything to be the best game of 2012?
Well, it means you were better than all the other games in 2012.
By what metric?
By the metric of the people that were giving out these awards.
I mean,
was the soundtrack super awesome?
You know, I don't remember it well. I have a copy of it, but I have not listened to it recently.
Either that or you have terrible taste.
Or it just blended into the game so well that...
Cart Life won the grand prize at the Independent Games Festival.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a cool statement that is also a game.
I mean, I feel like it really taught me a lot about how you can't make a peanut butter hot dog bun sandwich.
So, like, this is an example, I think, of a game that is trying to make a statement about something in the world that is also a compelling game, right? And that's I think, where I'm curious about, right? Like, because this is a well-crafted experience that makes you feel things as opposed to sort of a...
Well, and it, like...
Less well.
The way that everyone was talking about it bears out the value of doing that, right? Because, I mean, every general video game podcast and website I saw that talks about that sort of thing at all raved over Cart Life, I don't think I've seen anybody or heard anybody much talking about Ananthropy's game.
Yeah, I mean, Dysphoria is...
So, I mean, I talked about Dysphoria a year ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I talked about Cart Life like 3 months before anybody else ever heard of Cart Life. And I was like, yeah, I don't know what the fuck, man. I can't figure out how to play this game because it wouldn't let me make a peanut butter dog. And I gave up because I starved. I mean, I didn't like... And it wasn't like, oh, game over, you starved to death. It's like, nope, you're hungry, so you walk real slow or whatever, and you can't do anything else. I'm like, God damn it. Like, if I were an immigrant, the one tool I have at my disposal for differentiating myself, for differentiating myself from the locals is weird food. Why is this game stripping me, the immigrant, of my power?
That's right. It's taking away your heritage.
There have been, for the past 10 years at GDC, there have been game design challenges. Last year, there was one based on religion, which Jason Rohrer made that.
Oh, is that where Jason Rohrer invented Monopoly? Except every time you land on free parking, you have to shoot yourself.
Yes.
That doesn't sound like a very good religion.
So that's where Chain World came out of, or whatever. But this year, the theme was a game for the end of time or something.
So this is basically just like, let's give Jason Rohrer a ribbon every year.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Jason Rohrer won with a game called A Game for Someone, where he made a game and... it is a game that no one has ever played, including himself, and I don't think he even knows all the rules or has ever seen, like, he had a computer basically design the game.
Okay.
And then had all the parts, you know, sort of manufactured with materials that would last, his hope is, for several thousand years, and then went out into the desert and buried it. And then... So that people would eventually find it, he recorded the GPS coordinates, which he then put on a piece of paper along with, I think, 900,000 other GPS coordinates, so that one of those places has his game.
That seems like, I mean, if your goal is for somebody to eventually find it and play it.
Yeah. Or maybe it was 900,000. Maybe it was 9,000.
That doesn't seem to be a way to cause that to happen.
Well, he figured that if one person every day or whatever.
Sure, if.
Went out and checked one of the coordinates.
Right, but 2,000 years from now, GPS coordinates aren't going to mean anything.
Maybe. I mean, and plus it depends on somebody actually going out and checking all those coordinates, and that's not going to
happen.
It's
not one person. I mean, like, in fact, it's very specifically not one person.
Is he hoping for a Wild Stallions situation
where
in the future where all society is built on his teachings? It's like, oh, Chain World, man. It changed everything.
Yeah.
Once we all discovered how to poop in a bush. That changed the nature of society.
Sling our baby's poop in a bush. And that did change the nature of society. It made it like China.
Right.
I like almost everything about Jason Rohrer. The one thing that I don't like about Jason Rohrer is the press about Jason Rohrer.
Yeah, I mean, I have been pretty excited by his ideas.
Yeah.
Yep. Played a little bit of the Castle Doctrine. I don't remember if I talked about it on the last.
Played a little of that.
Yeah, it's like...
It's interesting. It's hard.
Yeah, it's
to the point
hard
where it's
and super
not
unforgiving
fun.
And not
yeah.
fun. Yeah,
it's also pre-alpha at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
Stop. Everybody's using that as an excuse.
Well, I mean,
so the idea is good, and
yeah.
it's going to take
I
some
mean,
time.
I mean, one
to
thing that I think
make
would
it
make it much more fun actually is just the ability to save a blueprint of your first $2,000 house.
Yep.
So that
that's
every
what
time
I was,
you die,
that's what I
you
was
can just
about.
Click a button and get it back. Instead of having to spend
yeah, but that's
the
not
five
the way that it works
to...
in the real world. If you die, you can't just click a button and suddenly have, like, your job again.
So you can't click a button and have your wife and family back?
No. Someone tweeted today the idea of a game where you are a Mars space station manager and you have to deal with the fact that some space marine is out on the surface of Mars quick saving and quick loading all the time. so you can't get anything done.
It was Bennett Foddy. Credit the fucking tweets, man. He said, look at me, I'm on Twitter. Nothing matters.
I don't follow Bennett Foddy, so I don't even know. Somebody else retweeted it, and I don't pay attention to that shit. Mm-hmm. I said somebody That's on a Twitter.
Good idea.
It was Bennett Foddy.
Okay. Cool.
Oh, I meant to get the slides from Bennett Foddy's talk and refute all of his points one by one. He gave a point. His talk was why Zach is stupid.
And your rebuttal is,
wait a minute.
Nuh-uh.
Point number one, nuh-uh. Point number two, no. Point number three, that's you.
I guess I didn't really need
to bring the talk out. It was why free-to-play games suck. Maybe I'll give a talk about why you suck. maybe free-to-play games don't want you to
maybe,
like them.
Maybe your mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's up, Bennett Foddy?
And then I wanted
was fun.
To mention that
stupid.
Neil Stephenson and Subotai's game, Clang, that the Kickstarter game about sword fighting, is on Steam Greenlight.
Oh, so it's another venue for imaginary games to kind of exist.
Well, what I don't exactly understand is while you technically can play the game with keyboard and mouse, it's not at all meant to be played that way. Hmm. And I didn't think that Steam was a place where you put crazy alternative controller games, right?
You play with your dick, right?
Well, you can.
You put it in one of those Sony Move fleshlights.
Fleshlights.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Johann Sebastian.
Triple X.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the
Johann
news.
Sebastian Cracker.
Yeah.
Can't move too fast. You'll lose.
For reasons. Yeah. Cool.
Segway! So the assignments. Sorry, guys.
Commander Keen.
I had 3 weeks and I did not play even 1 second
of
Commander Keen.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
It's not me. It's one of us. Every time.
It's never me. I have always played the assignment.
It'll be your turn eventually.
Kevin
bills me for the time he plays the assignment, so he's never going to forget to do it.
Only 2 hours. Because that's a reasonable amount of time to play games.
Per assignment?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you really have... Oh, okay. I mean...
Right?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. Why not?
I had no reason to mistrust you, but... Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, Commander Keen.
I feel like you've really opened the kimono, as they said. Remember when we were at that Yeti's End party and that girl was trying to sell you an SDK for us to track our whales?
Jesus Christ.
And then, it sounds dirty.
Well, and then I was made to feel bad about it later because they were people were like, "What if she was just a marine biologist, and you totally dissed her?" And I was like, "Oh Jesus, I didn't even consider that angle." Jesus,
did she have a scar and a beard and sailor tattoos and a big harpoon
and a peg leg?
Wow, yeah. that is an incredibly stereotyped impression of what a marine biologist looks like.
Yeah, we're trying to be more inclusive, Riff, not less. You're worse than those dancing girls.
I guess my follow-up question about whether or not it was a white whale, I just won't ask that one.
Yeah, wow. So, Riff, what did you think of Commander Keen?
I thought it was okay. I thought the controls were kind of clunky.
Yeah.
I liked that instead of just having the standard double jump, you had to get that pogo stick, which worked a little differently than just regular double jump.
Anything but standard at that point.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering. What do any of us happen to know what the first game with double jump was?
I'm guessing it was a mistake.
Ghouls
in some video
and Ghosts
game.
Was the first game that I remember having a double jump.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. The controls were frustrating until you got used to them, and then they were predictable, but still not it seems like there was a long period where video games kept trying to sort of figure out their own physics and their own sort of scheme.
This was many years after Super Mario Brothers, though. Yeah. This was a weird sort of a watershed moment in PC gaming because John Carmack figured out how to do smooth background scrolling. And like, there were a ton of technical challenges overcome that resulted in what feels like an extremely bare bones and mediocre platformer
now.
That were at the time, like,
revolutionary.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. They weren't revolutionary. Having them on PC was revolutionary. Mm. Right.
Huh.
And also, I mean, shareware as a model. Sure. Like, Commander Keen was at the forefront of that.
Yeah.
Mm. But yeah, as our podcast buddies Watch Out for Fireballs say, any platformer that doesn't handle like Super Mario is ultimately disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. I went through and like got all the parts and built my ship and stuff. There's a cycle at the end of the game where you can get an infinite number of lives and points if you want to, if you don't finish the level.
I got about halfway through. I got two of the parts and then...
So it got to the ice.
Yeah. Yeah, then I teleported to the other half of the planet and I saw ice and I was like, not for me.
Kevin asked me while we were in the apartment and he was playing Commander Keen, he said, has anyone ever enjoyed an ice level?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, they're suddenly removing...
always frustrating.
The friction.
Yeah. I like a top-down ice level. Like, I like a Legend of Zelda pushing the blocks across ice puzzle, but I don't like platforming on ice.
I remember in Super Mario 2, always using Peach in the ice levels.
Just because you can float.
Yeah, because she didn't have to spend any time on the ground. And that was an interesting challenge, right? It was like the floor was lava, except really the floor was the opposite of lava.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry I didn't play this game, guys.
Just don't do it again.
I can't make any promises.
So what's our assignment for next week going
to
be?
I don't know, man. We got to go to ZapCon.
Yeah.
And not play any video games.
Okay.
Wait, no.
That's not how that works.
That's the opposite of what you do
at ZapCon.
Play all
the video games, yeah.
Yeah, there is very little chance of this episode being published before ZapCon.
Oh.
I guess it might. I'll try. I will try to publish this episode before ZapCon. But if you live in Phoenix and you don't already know about ZapCon, go to ZapCon.com.
It either is on April 6th and 7th. Or was,
yeah, was on April 6th and 7th. But one thing that you will know while you were at ZapCon is that the video games hot dog assignment, DuckTales for the NES, which they're remaking, and they announced that at PAX East.
DuckTales remastered.
I don't know that I believe that this game needs to be remade.
I played 5 minutes of it without reading any instructions and have no idea how the fuck it's supposed to work.
Of the NES one?
Yeah. Very confusing.
Yeah.
The only verb that I could find was jump.
But
which doesn't let you do anything.
Once you jump, you can start pogo sticking if you hold down while you're jumping, which is huge.
Obvious.
When you are up against a brick, you can hit a button to golf club swing.
Do you have to collect the golf club and the pogo stick first, maybe?
No, it's your cane.
Okay. Nothing was working for me other than jumping, and I could also crouch, but that didn't seem to do anything.
Well, it makes your head slightly lower.
Well, sure. That's true.
Yeah, if you can crouch without your head getting any lower, then...
That's impressive.
I'm suspicious of your definition of the word crouch.
Well, I mean, if you have a really stretchy neck.
Okay.
Like, getting on all fours.
I'd be suspicious of your humanity.
Mm. You can't have everything.
I guess that's true.
Are you racist against stretchy neck people?
Yeah. Rubber men? Or rubber women?
I just feel like people who can crouch without their head moving are not people.
Ugh.
So much as they're weird neck stretch aliens.
Wow. That is, you are just revealing all kinds of discriminatory...
I'm sorry. I thought that living in San Francisco for a while made me more sensitive, but it turns out it just made me even less sensitive, and I don't...
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I think you need to check your privilege as a non-stretchy-necked person.
You know, Kevin's sick.
Yes,
I am. We got a lot of shit to do tomorrow. I think that we're going to call it quits on this episode of
Forever.
Make it short. No, next week we'll have ZapCon to talk about. Hopefully we'll have all sorts of... There's a pinball rodeo, which I don't
whatever
know
whatever that what is
that means. Riff has to work it.
I think you lasso a bunch of pinball machines.
Huh.
Which, you know, is challenging because they're large and easy because they don't move.
Are they going to be greased?
Did you play any interesting pinball machines at Lucky Juju while we were in Alameda?
I don't remember the names of a lot of them.
I played a ton of the Twilight Zone pinball machine.
I played a bunch of the CSI pinball machine.
Huh.
There's a centrifuge.
Yeah.
There's a microscope.
Yeah.
You're collecting bullets. Bullets.
Yeah. Like just evidence, basically. You're trying to collect evidence. It's hard.
There is some sort of a black light that you use to roll the pinball across semen stains.
Yeah.
Wow, I was going to make that joke. Is that a real thing?
No.
Blood stains.
Okay.
The Twilight Machine pinball game.
Twilight Machine?
Twilight Zone. The Twilight Zone machine.
The Twilight Machine Pinball Zone.
Florence and the Machine's new album, Pinball Zone,
is
dope as fuck. The Twilight Zone pinball machine is interesting.
Hmm.
There's a lot of magnets, and then one of the balls is ceramic. And I remember you telling me about this before, but I never really understood.
That ceramic isn't attracted to magnets?
Yeah.
No, and it also just rolls weird. It's just, it's wrong. It, like, it's disconcerting to be playing this pinball machine with a ball that doesn't behave like
a steel ball.
A pinball.
Hmm.
Yeah. It doesn't stick to any of the holes.
Man, I wonder if, like, is anybody making replacements for those balls?
Yeah, yeah. Stern is still making pinball games and stuff.
But there are making multiple vendors at ZapCon selling pinball machine replacement parts and stuff.
Right. Yep. No, but I'm thinking of those specific ceramic.
Oh, the ceramic
Twilight Zone.
Oh,
are you looking to use one of those as a replacement testicle?
No.
That'd be rad, though.
It would.
What about a glass eye?
Might be now. Glass eye. That'd be good.
Yeah, I could just add one as a third testicle.
I've always wanted to see what goes on down there.
I was always kind of thinking that a pinball would make a pretty boss glass eye, except
wait, glass eye webcam.
Kevin, except were you suggesting heavy that, on one side?
Were
of your
you
head.
Suggesting that getting one of your testicles replaced with a glass eye would allow you to see inside your nutsack?
Yes.
I get.
That's
I get,
how that works.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure anyone else is going to get. Where
I mean, this is why Columbo is such a good detective.
Was because he could see inside his own nutsack.
That's where all the clues are, man.
Okay. Well, I've had a good time recording this episode of Video Games Hot Dog with you fine gentlemen.
I agree.
Have a great week, everyone.
And we'll see you next time.
Time. Oh, dear.
Segway!